This is episode 87 of Storm Buds. 87 being a particularly special number because it would always be the number that I would put after my online usernames as a child to
is
seem funny and random.
It's the year that you were born?
Nope, I was born 89.
Oh, okay, that's right. You're not that much older than me.
No, no, and neither of my brothers were born at 87. It was just like the funny number to me as a child.
Okay. You know, it's got some lulls or random energy to it.
XD.
Seven's like a good wild card, right? Seven's kind of an oddball.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's got a, but it's like a big, I don't know.
Weird little like bent L that it is.
It maybe also could have been like a feint for those times when I, maybe when I was like 11 and I was like, I was born in 87.
And then it, I want to seem like I'm 13.
Yeah, I
want to
seem like I'm 13 so I can sign up for Hotmail. God, the early days of the internet were, you know, in essence, not that different. Not any less dangerous than they are today. But they were so, we felt like we were really pioneers.
Yes. I think people overstate how the community part of the early internet. I think we have a lot of good internet communities now that are like very valuable for people. Mm-hmm. But also, man, I wish, or I should say, I miss when the internet was not as load bearing for every single part of
life. Yeah. I mean,
I miss sitting down in front of the computer for a couple hours and then getting up and doing something else.
It was the internet was a treat and something we all looked forward to accessing. For a bit of time, maybe for some IRC chat rooms.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe for some multi-user dungeon gameplay.
I spent a lot of time on BBSs as a kid.
Oh, my God.
Figuring out that I was not actually a libertarian, but that my original impulses were pointed in the right direction.
Hey, that's good learning. That's great learning. I mostly spent most of my time on multi-user dungeons, which are, of course, IRC chat room RPGs.
Were they good games?
Hell yeah. They slapped.
Because I think about how difficult like modern MMOs are to balance with like huge teams behind them. And I'm like, we're a small volunteer crew really like making sure that the level scaling was like...
Small volunteer group basically made Diablo 2.
I guess. Okay, you're right.
Not to volunteer, but yeah, they were getting paid for something. But they're fun. They're good. They're just good old-fashioned RPGs. They are old-fashioned RPGs, and they are often punishing. I remember another one I used to play, Elephant Mud, had a really intricate limbs system that you really had to manage. Otherwise, you would...
Were you playing as elephants?
No, it was just a typical Lord of the Rings-inspired fantasy thing. But you had that, and there were like a million ways you could die, and they also had elections for each of the guild's like leaders, and they would have a council, and then also if you were engaged in PvP and you got caught killing somebody, you would go to jail. So
boy, we really were just out here like reinventing society.
They
huh?
would like get evidence and be like, this person, you know, like take them to court and be like, this person was on at this time and then their name disappeared from the who list, and then I got attacked by a highwayman and they're this level rogue. And they'd be like, yeah, I did it. I don't know. That was some people had some wild ideas, and I'm sure there's a lot of more other wild ideas. Speaking of wild ideas, we are going to talk about one very wild game and another one that's kind of a surprise. Let's get into that discussion, shall we?
Nice segue.
Thanks. It was completely natural. The Idol is back for another season, and who will be its top contestant? Cultestant? I don't know.
Buds, storm of buds, and we're going to tell you about how we saved the world.
Welcome to Storm Buds, the video game podcast that plays a bunch of games every month according to a theme, and this month's theme is Goldvember. All the video games you could think of that deal with or look for or pertain to gold in a certain way. I am your golden boy of light, Jerome Barbatsis, and I am joined by my co-golden boy of light, Alexander Hambrock. Say hello.
I've got an idol here. I'm pointing it at you. Do you know what it does? We're gonna find out. Should I pull the lever?
Yeah, go for it. Oh, that tickles.
Is that it?
Oh, that was pleasant.
It just tickles?
That was nice.
I thought it would, like, I don't know, make coins shoot from your mouth or something.
Oh, well, that would be cool, too. Unfortunately, it just kind of got tickled me right on the forearm.
Maybe this golden idol doesn't do very much.
Well, this is our episode, basically the episode we based the entire theme month around because we saw it was coming out. And also, I made that Austin Powers joke. Thank you. We're going to be talking about Rise of the Golden Idol, the newly released point-and-click mystery game. Adventure game, I was about to say. Not really an adventure game. Point-and-click mystery narrative puzzle solving game. And in the second half of this episode, we're going to pivot a little bit. Our month-long kind of recurring thing was going to be Sea of Thieves, but this past week, neither Alex nor I could bear to pay the sort of price of entry into Sea of Thieves, as it were, which is just like a lot of setup and preparation. It's like, do I really want to man the sails right now and just sit on the water for 20 minutes? But I've got a surprise golden pick that came out that I want to talk about in the second half of the episode that came out on Halloween of all times.
Okay, I have no idea what this is.
This is a mobile game, Pokemon Trading Card Game Pocket. And there is gold in it if you pay for the subscription service and get the Pokemon Gold tokens and use those in your shop. But also the first 2 weeks of that are free. Hey, I don't have to defend myself. I haven't spent money on it yet. We'll talk about that in the B segment.
Boy, as someone who was very into the online Pokemon TCG for like 18 months, I'm super curious about this.
Get fucking ready. This shit's good. But first, we're going to talk about the Golden Idol.
Okay. Tell us more about it.
Tell us more.
Boy, this game rules.
Okay.
Okay, so this is, like you said, the sequel to...
Great. This game rules. Come on, man. You know you have a role here.
I have a role here. Okay. So the Case of the Golden Idol is a 2022 puzzle game that we both talked about in this podcast. You played when it came out, and I played maybe like half a year later. Mm-hmm. I don't recall how much we actually talked about the mechanics of that game, so I think we'll do a bit more of a dive on that right now.
Sure.
But it comes from a developer named Color Gray Games. I had not known them for anything previously. I think this might actually be that was their first game, and it did very well. It got, I think, was kind of like acclaimed in certain like circles, and so they will turn around a sequel really quick 2 years later, and now we have Rise of the Golden Idol, which is it has some mechanical tweaks and some quality of life stuff, but for the most part is fundamentally kind of like the same gameplay structure. And so I think it'll be easy to talk about both of them, or to talk about the second game in relation to the first.
Yeah.
It is a series of kind of tableaus, I guess I would call them. Mm-hmm. You are dropped into a scene with very little context in which you will see a variety of people standing around, maybe saying one line of dialogue, maybe having some kind of emotional reaction, and maybe they're carrying things like a wallet or their keys or a photograph, and maybe things in the scene like someone's pinned a note to a corkboard or there's like a fingerprint on a vase or something like that. And you just click around and study everything in the scene. And in doing so, you build up also a bank of words. The words can be names, they can be nouns, they can be verbs. And the goal with each scene is to basically, once you think you have an understanding of what has occurred over the preceding 5 minutes, 1 day, 3 days, whatever it is, which is actually interesting that I think about it in terms of, put a pin in that. Then you take those words and you use them to fill in kind of basically a Mad Libs sheet in which it'll say like blank was talking to blank when suddenly blank blanked the blank. Horrified, blank ran to the blank and blanked. And you have to figure out, okay, who was doing what at which points in time? What did they do? What is kind of the total narrative here? And it's extremely satisfying to solve. And all of it ties together around kind of a running narrative thread in both games around people being obsessed with this golden idol, which is possessed of incredible mystical powers. And I also find the settings of these games really interesting because they're both set in different kind of historical periods. And they're both historical periods that I think are a bit underserved, especially in video games. The first one takes place in the late 1700s, in like kind of like the pseudo Europe. It's Europe, but with like all the serial numbers filed off, mm-hmm. and it's doing a lot with sort of like examining colonialism and the various kind of like political revolutions and upheavals that are going on then. I think especially sort of like, you know, like the English Revolution, I think, is coming on the heels of the French Revolution, stuff like that. And it's like, and it's very interested, I think, in how people seek power. And the second game takes place in basically the 70s, possibly spilling, I think basically the 70s, in kind of like a US or European context. And it has a lot of stuff going on with a lot of the revivals of New Age and mysticism and like the study of ESP and things like that. A lot of the ways in which science was also being increasingly commercialized and the growth of sort of like in general commercial business culture, especially as we get into the 80s. Like all of these things that I feel, again, are kind of a little underexamined in pop culture and in game culture, and that the game is just interested in doing fun stuff with. And that's kind of my high-level summary to kick off our discussion.
Well, that was an excellent high-level summary. Thank you for providing that for us and the buds. Much better than I could have done. Holy heck. Very impressive. This game is very high on my list of just games we've played this year already, because... I guess I kind of like this kind of game. This is one of those games where you, once you understand or learn about the mechanics, you know you're going to love it or maybe get away from it because it's not exactly a high octane sort of situation. It's definitely a game that I wanted to shotgun as we were going into this, but I ended up kind of feeling it was better to savor. So at this point, I am progress-wise, I am in the middle of like the I'm nearing the end of the fourth chapter.
Okay.
I think I looked at your Steam progress.
I beat this game.
You beat this game already.
I was pulled in. Every time I sat down, like 3 hours passed.
I just wanted to let it sit and linger because it does say so much about the relationship that science has with mysticism and the ways in which people enforce and connive and scheme and make I'm still thinking about it because I'm not done with this game yet, but there's and I think from maybe this point forward, be wary of spoilers. I don't know how far plot wise we are going to talk, but I do want to talk about some of my favorite things that have some of my favorite cases, maybe some of my favorite moments or clues or aha things. So we certainly won't be talking about anything, hopefully, in chapter 5.
No, definitely not.
Dick. that would be your fault. But I think there's at least up until chapter like 2, I want to talk a little bit about like sort of the setup of this game, because it was it's been really incredible. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, it did hook me in pretty quickly. I still like this game opens up with its classic tutorial murder. That's just like one scene and three things. That was already really interesting. And then it goes back in time a little bit each chapter until it kind of flashes forward and everything sort of starts to interweave and connect. There are at this point in the game, I think, it's less clear to me in this mid-game how everything is connecting than it was in the case of the Golden Idol, where it was pretty obvious and pretty linear. Not necessarily obvious, quote-unquote, but it was pretty linear in the way things were going with the rise of the party and the cult and the masks and like the everything going on. As for this, and like in the big reveal to me in the case of the Golden Idol, I did figure out in advance. Didn't mean I didn't enjoy it. This game, no fucking clue what's going on. Like, I think this game is so much better at obscuring what the big picture is and what, like, the thread is. And I'm absolutely loving that. A couple particular favorite cases of mine in chapter 2. I mean, chapter 2 is exceptional all the way through, but the auction house,
yes,
at the end where you're trying to sort of figure out who everyone is in the dark and the different clues there. Also, the drive-through was pretty funny. And obviously, like grotesque, like everything that's funny in this game is funny in like a grotesque sort of like whoa kind of way.
The drive through though was one of the first ones like where you were I think you're talking about where it was like, oh,
what
like
the fuck?
We're jumping kind of far away. Like most of like the case of the Golden Idol scenes, like again, like are largely around like various people doing things in like aristocratic England.
Yeah,
whereas like, this was like, oh, like we're really in like a drive-in movie theater now.
Like really centered on that one family with like Edmund and stuff and the and just the journey of the idol itself, whereas this in this game, yeah, the idol is taking quite a different journey, and it, people like it, because of the time skip too, people just have such a very different understanding in this realm of how in this world of like how anything like a golden idol could possibly or exist or not. And I think it's such a stark contrast to the first game where people were much more willing to believe something like a golden idol is possible.
It's great. Like this game, like as a sequel to that story, which ended with some pretty big world changing stuff at again in like called the year 1797. And it turns out in this game, we pick up like 200 years later. And mostly what happened is people were like, that was like a weird historical period. We don't have a lot of great records from then. They claim that this thing happened with the golden idol, but like, that's ridiculous, right? That's just like some nonsense legend. Mm-hmm.
Enough time has passed that people and just the tale has been lost to time, much like, I guess, I don't know, real life. There's probably a whole bunch of fascinating stuff we don't, probably, there definitely is a whole bunch of fascinating stuff that we don't know and could have learned from had colonizers not burnt all the records of the New World.
Well, and like, I want to pick up on something you mentioned earlier also, which is like, as I was playing this game, I was like, oh, okay. I start to see, actually, I think what at least what interests this studio creatively, or at least what interests them in making these games, which I hope there will be a third one. I imagine that'll be very fun. Like, really what they are focused on is just sort of like, they are fascinated by human vice, by small, greedy, selfish people who will step on other people to get ahead, right?
Yeah, like, a lot of that.
A lot of the people in these games, especially the characters who ended up following through, are just like, they're not even evil exactly, so much as they're just, they're petty and self-interested, and they don't really care about the consequences of their actions. And like, and so a lot of what's going on is just various bad things continuing to happen because various short-sighted people continue to pursue their own self-interest in, and like, and it's kind of like, I don't want to say it's bleak because it's kind of not bleak actually, but it is, but it meshes with the art style very well.
I was about to mention, speaking of the people, the art style in this game, if you saw the art style of Golden Idol and you thought, ick, not for me, then this game kind of is also not for you because they have leaned into the grotesque aesthetic that they had first set out, that they first set out to accomplish. And I really want to talk about why I think this is so impactful and interesting to me personally. I think especially in The Rise of the Golden Idol, the artistry in this game is so intentional. I think with the case of the Golden Idol, I saw some discourse about whether or not this was quote unquote good art. And it had to do with, I think it had a lot to do with the choice to use pixel art. And as somebody who dabbles in it, one of the benefits of pixelated drawings is that you learn to let go of the precision necessary to draw like straight lines and keep your shapes consistent and keep your world like you're drawing, like for instance, drawing bricks all the same doesn't really matter too much. You kind of can get away with a lot of values and painting and using different colors of red and brown to represent your bricks without necessarily having to draw each line of the rectangle. There are a lot of bricks and window panes and things that should be very very equal in this game, but they are so very not. The artists here have eschewed shape all together, but you can see that they still, especially again in like the auction house, the way the sunset is like lighting up these characters from the back, you can see that they very deeply understand how value works, how character motion works, how tone works, how composition works.
Oh, it's great. Yeah. No, this game looks incredible.
This is this game does everything exceptionally well, and then it just completely disregards everything that we know about, or everything that we would accept or think of as good for shapes and for character details. Like, the eyes look like something that I drew a self-portrait of in second grade. You know, they're always these, like, almondy diamonds with the pupil directly in the center. heavy lining on the eyes, and these characters are moving more and more and more, and I think in the case of the Golden Idol, the characters kind of wiggled a little bit maybe, or and had a little bit of rigging to them, and then that got more advanced with the DLC that came out. Did you do the DLC?
I did not do the DLC. I need to go back to it.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
the DLC is. Oh, it's going to be really fascinating after this game too.
Okay,
yeah, you should do it anyway. But yeah, the and you'll see in the art, it gets like, oh, it's like this is a little bit more elevated in terms of motion and detail. Definitely still keeping the same sort of forbidden shapes that they use all the time. So it's just really, I think, a really masterfully done form of abstract, cartoony comic tableau drawing that works so well to establish the tone of this game, which is just strange, very eldritch.
Yes. Well, so like, I like the art style of the first game a lot. And in particular, I like the fact that it looks like old entertainment software. Like, yeah, it looks like the Yukon Trail.
It does, but yeah, he's showing me a picture of the Yukon Trail here. But I mean, if you even look at that, like, look mm-hmm. at that fence there.
Yeah, the fence is very regular.
The fence is very regular, mm-hmm. very perspective. The thing, it's slightly at an angle, so the boxes get slightly smaller as you're getting mm-hmm. back on that fence. That would not happen here.
No, it would not. Well, but I do also think I found this game actually noticeably easier than the case of the Golden Idol. And maybe that's because I've just gotten much better at these puzzles. Certainly, I've learned how this logic works, certainly. But also, this game feels more visually readable to me. It was I found myself just having an easier time kind of like parsing information in a scene and like starting to like, you know, I mean, again, the quality of life stuff around sort of having like the different panels that you can use to organize yes. information helps a lot.
Yes, but so also, there's like panels you can move. You can move the panels now, and you can kind of make your own sort of corkboard and organize your own workflow, which does make it a lot more accessible. And that's not to say the puzzles have gotten easier, because I think the name density has definitely upped considerably since Case of the Golden Idol.
A lot of names, yeah, a lot of people.
I mean, that's part of it. Like, that's part of the fun of it. Just it does sort of feel a lot like work sometimes, where I'm like, okay, I have a you know, a code base. I have a script to write, and I have like different parts to put in at different places. But this is this is more fun. It's just a fun story around it. But I think always if you find yourself struggling at this, don't let the words of us saying that it's maybe easier than the case of the Golden Idol sway you or make you feel bad. Just know that it's the game. What we mean is that the game makes it a lot easier for you to make your workflow and your problem solving style match or like shine through this, just because it's just easier to organize the thoughts you're having.
Mm-hmm. And I think some of the puzzles might be just a bit clearer. There were times in Rise of the Golden Idol where stuff could be really opaque, and I'd get there eventually, but I'd be like, okay, I still don't really grasp how I was supposed to get there. Every puzzle in this,
I think particularly like the mask, the cult scene was a little bit of a guessing game mm-hmm. with like what the rules of that ritual were. And I think I remember being a little difficult. I think I agree so far. I haven't seen anything like that in Case 5 yet. Hopefully it doesn't end on a whimper like that. But I'm absolutely having a blast to play this game. Highly recommend anyone who is interested in any sort of mystery
fiction at all, check out Case and Rise of the Golden Idol. They've really delivered exactly what we wanted. And we were, guess what? More, please. Can this studio just do that until they get super bored of it?
I think it'd be really cool if the third one set in like the 2080s or whatever. It's like a cyberpunk game or something.
I feel like it's, I would be interested, because I would be interested to see what they have to say about what humanity would not have learned from mm-hmm. this in the future. It seems like it would be hard to call that shot, but it's also, I don't know where they would go. Right, where would they go? Is there a whole period in the turn of the 20th century that we missed out on with this, or is there something to do with some going even farther back beyond the 1700s? It's entirely up to how they want to take that direction. I'm very interested to see where they go, and very willing to ride along whatever they decide to do.
Definitely.
Yeah. But that's our, I think, our thoughts on The Rise of the Golden Idol. Sorry, dissociated. Anyway, we are going to move on to our B segment. Of course, we're going to take a little break. We're going to buy new phones.
Yes, we just bought new phones last month, but now we're buying new ones again. I got an iPhone 15. I was like, you know, I think I do need the 16 after all.
You were just complaining about the calculator. It's just calculator trying to sell you something. Throw it out the window and buy something else. So, you know, in that meantime, we'll run our ad read, and then we will be right back with discussion on surprise golden game pick, Pokemon trading card game Pocket.
We're gonna read some ads.
My dad works in pharmaceutical marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he loves engaging calls. Then he talked about his favorite key opinion leaders, and my friends still make fun of me to this day.
Not everyone gets marketing, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next...
My best friend Marcus asked me if my dad was responsible for the American opioid crisis.
Jesus.
I don't know much about that, but my dad looked scared when I asked him after school that day. The next day, a reporter came by our house and said he was working on a book. He asked if he could get any of my dad's papers from his office, but I didn't let him inside.
Okay. Go to linkedin.com/stormbuds to claim your ad campaign credit today. That's linkedin.com/stormbuds to claim your ad campaign credit. Terms and conditions apply.
Marcus says that's when my parents got a divorce.
Excuse me.
He said my dad was a pill pusher and he should be in jail. Maybe that's true, but my dad bought me a PS5, and Marcus has to play Fortnite on an old laptop from his grandma, so what does he know?
This is a lot. LinkedIn. Am I good? Okay. LinkedIn. The place to be. To be. That's something else. Well, we're back, and we got new phones.
I got an iPhone 18.
I got a rotary phone. I'm done.
You're done
with this shit.
Oh, it looks like Kermit the Frog. That's cool.
Yeah, it's sweet as hell. It's just it's good. It's good for the old autism, that little tug.
Oh, yeah, satisfying.
Very satisfying.
Very physically engaging.
Highly recommend it. Anyway, enough about that shit. We are going to talk now about the Pokemon trading card game Pocket. This is the mobile new Pokemon trading card game application developed by Creatures Inc. and DNA, published by the Pokemon Company. This was revealed a day before my birthday this year, February 27th, 2024, during the Pokemon Presents presentation, which I think was like during the World Championships or something like that, and officially released on October 30th, well, in Japan, and October 31st here, I believe. I don't know. Same, whatever. Halloween time on both iOS and Android. And after 3 days, it got 10 million downloads.
Jesus.
It has exploded. And this is wild to me. I mean, like, I had heard nothing about it until I saw friends streaming it on Twitch. And I was like, oh, this is cool. But I'm like, it's just the Pokemon game. It's just like kind of slow and a little boring. I don't know if I want to play it. Right? Right?
Right?
Wrong.
Wrong.
They made some fucking changes to this game that make it much more competitive with more current mobile card games like Marble Snap.
Okay. Before we get here, before we get into the changes,
yeah.
I have a general question, because this is like playing with like contemporary cards, right?
No.
Oh, no.
It's all any, like, there's like a new digital set, and it has cards from like the base edition, has EX cards, has cards from like the first expansion that I still had copies of from Jungle, I think it was called.
Okay. Set.
Like, it spans the entire process. Do you remember the like slope, the little slowpoke art where the slowpoke is just like off in the distance on like the green horizon.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's in there.
Okay.
It's that slowpoke.
Okay. I ask because.
Yeah.
I was, for about 18 months in like 2016, very into the then like freemium online TCG that was basically a replication of the in-person card game. And I ended up bouncing off that because it felt like, and the meta was kind of always here, but especially over the course of the time that I spent with it, the meta felt like it evolved, no pun intended, in the direction of really just kind of being about like, I'm going to play down my special EX card with 370 HP and it's going to have a powerful attack. I'm going to play down my special EX card with 460 HP and it's going to use its powerful EX attack. And like a lot of other mechanics that I found interesting in the game seemed like, because they all bypassed evolutions, right? It was all like, you can just play your Polywrath on turn one. You don't need to wait for like, you know,
something.
Any
kind
of resource accumulation.
It only has 200 and some cards in the game right now.
Okay.
Some of them are, of course, those basic, you know, quote unquote basic Pokemon EX games that don't evolve. So if you're not familiar with Pokemon trading card game, Pokemon in the catalog that do not have any evolutions beforehand are, well, actually, even in the game, like, just don't have anything to evolve into, can be played as basic Pokemon. That includes some legendary Pokemon, including like Mewtwo EX, which is out, Lapras EX is another one, and Pikachu EX is another very powerful starter. But anyway, I want to talk about the other differences from the physical game in terms of the rules. The deck size has been reduced from 60 to 20.
Okay.
So good. Does that make Professor Oak way too good? Yes.
Sure.
Professor Oak draws you two cards. It's like, well, that's a 10th of your deck. The energy card requirement. No longer are energy cards. It is instead changed to a Hearthstone-esque system where you are generating an energy per turn, and the energy that is generated per turn depends on the different symbols that are in your deck. So if you've got two different energy symbols like grass and fire, it will not alternate, it will randomly decide between grass and fire to spawn for you. So if you're trying to make a multicolored deck, you may want to make sure that you have some colorless symbols in your casting or in your ability costs. I'm not going to go too into the rules of Pokemon TCG Pocket because this game has a very robust tutorial that does it for you. Didn't take too long to get through, and it's quite rewarding. And speaking of rewards, the notable feature here is that this game is a free-to-play starter game, but you do get two packs per day, just at a default. And then the more you play, the more quests and missions and weeklies and stuff you do, the more of those dopamine hits you get, the more packs you get to unlock, the more things you get open. So you get 5 cards per pack. You're not guaranteed a rare in every pack, but you are... I don't know. It's still satisfying to build out a card collection if you're a card collecting lover like me. The game also has been reduced from 6 prizes to 3 points.
Okay.
As opposed to, so that
moves like, faster. Just
it moves a lot faster.
Faster pace.
The EX rule still applies. So if you take out an EX Pokemon, you get 2 points. So there is a risk to starting with your EX Pokemon. If it gets got, then you're on your last life.
Yeah, because like my problem with the EX stuff wasn't even the EX cards in general. It was just that it felt like the game was just about playing your EX cards as fast as possible and then basically bonking them into each other.
I think,
and like,
I think
this looks like...
There's still probably some of that. I think a lot... There's like I certainly win more games where my EX cards come out than when I don't, you know, because I'm trying to go over people's heads with, I of course, I'm a grass freak, so I've got my grass deck, and I did manage to open 2 in my first day, so I don't know, maybe it's not that hard to get the cards, or maybe I'm super lucky. 2 Venusaur EXs, I was like, well, I'm going to build around this, like, this is nuts, these are nutty ones, including one of the Venusaur EXs that's the higher rarity frame, and I was like, hell yes.
Yo, they got fat Pikachu in here.
They have Pikachu. And of course, what drew me in as well was they have my children in the game. They've got the Bellsprout, Weeping Bell, and Victreebel.
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, well, all right. I gotta check this out. So yeah, it's really fun, very, very addicting. It's been something that I've been doing while I've been cooling off from the Golden Idol. Of course, you can you can sign up for the subscription service that will give you extra rewards every month and every missions and more missions to do on a daily basis. They give you, they tempt you in with the free trial for 2 weeks and then hope you forget to unsubscribe after that 2 week period. So just buyer beware. But otherwise, it's a really, really exciting new addition to the mobile gaming space. I am going to be playing the fuck out of it at the bars. Just like sitting there having a drink, talking to folks and slamming cards. There's AI battles you can do as well if you don't want to fight against other people's ridiculously expensive decks. And you can get more rewards for beating those AI missions with different types of decks. So if you're facing off against the very difficult fire deck with, for instance, if you face off against that difficult fire deck with only cards that are 1, 2, or 3 star rarities or 3 diamond rarities, excuse me, then you get extra shop tokens. And if you,
that's an interesting way to balance that.
Yeah,
okay,
and if
yeah.
you face off against the super hard ground or fighting deck with a bunch of with a deck that has only electric types in it, that or normal types in it, whatever, like then you get more shop tokens as well. Like, so the harder you make it for yourself, the more challenges you take on with those AI battles, the more rewards you get. But I think those are only one time, and then it's a drip feed kind of mobile game. But I think the drip is a lot better than, say, something like the Animal Crossing mobile game that came out. Like, this is definitely the most cogent and exciting version of a Nintendo mobile game that has come out, I think, ever. And I also want to point out this review written by Chris Tapsell, deputy editor of Eurogamer.net. Pokemon TCG Pocket Review. Uh-oh, it's really good.
Man, I'm looking through all these cards. This art is sick. You're right.
Like, the art's sick, dude.
Some of it is like new art, I can tell. Some of it is just really pulling the classic stuff from like the base set. Like, oh, they got the Kangaskhan in here. Ah, it looks so good.
Yeah, this is scratching an itch that Marvel Snap did not scratch for me, because I don't know if it's because I don't care about Marvel. Haven't cared about it for a really long time. But I think the mechanics of this game of just having Pokemon fight each other as opposed to needing to fight for those 3 lanes and trying to do all that stuff, it just makes more sense to me. I would probably be more interested in Marvel Snap if I were just having my superheroes fight each other. But instead they're, I don't know. That's a whole different discussion. I was not super into Marvel Snap, but I am super into this. Maybe it's because it's more simple and just has a interesting, like, but yeah, like the more you can also spend on this to bling out all your cards and get extra copies of cards to make them all shiny and promo-y and whatever, if you want to do that. There's all sorts of cosmetics you can get. And it's a very, very, very tempting game. But yes, I think uh-oh, it's really good is
the right description.
The correct description. Good job there. Okay, that's all I really want to say about it. Check it out. I can drop my friend code in the Discord. Actually, we have a friend codes channel. I will do that as this episode goes up. So you can add me, and then the more friends you have, also it like helps do. You get like,
I see the ulterior motive for this segment now.
Well, everyone gets, you drop your friend code in there too. Everyone gets packs. If the more friends they have. And also, this is really interesting. I forgot to mention this mechanic. It's probably my favorite thing ever, because my friend, one of our friends, mutual friends, opened a pack with a Bellsprout in it. And I got to see that he opened that pack, and I got to spend something called, what are they, Wonder something? No, I don't remember. I got to spend a currency that lets me also pick one of those 5 cards, not pick,
okay,
randomly get one of those 5 cards from his pack, and I got one of the Bellsprouts from it. I was like, yes. But you can also see if one of your friends or a stranger has opened a really good card, and you're like, oh, I want a 1 in 5 shot of that as well. And you can gamble, you can spend those tokens to also gamble on those things. And then you can send thanks to your friends, which gives them more shop credits. So there's like a kudos mechanic wherein when you trade or interact with other trainers, they are able to then use those kudos in the shop as well to get more packs, and the ball keeps rolling, baby.
Okay.
It's really good.
I just installed this. I'm setting up my account right now.
Hell yes. Hell yes. I did it, Pokemon. The Pokemon Company has put out a really objectively good game. It happened. It's been a while. All right. Okay, that's all I want to say on it. We've got another quick Pokemon-related segment. This is a segment I like to call A Wild Pokemon by Any Other Name.
Okay, hey, which back to segment course, names. Cool.
Which is, of course, a reference to Final Fantasy XIV's Realm Reborn's main quest name, A Wild Rose by Any Other Name.
So we're back to segment names being based off of Final Fantasy XIV.
Hell yes,
I thought
hell
we were
yes.
changing the gimmick.
Nope. I think the farther away we get from Final Fantasy XIV, the funnier it is that I dip into that well. I am going to dip into my box here. I've been playing a lot of Pokemon Violet ever since our episode. I'm going to dip into my box here, and this segment difficulty is impossible.
Yeah, sorry, what am I doing?
This is just, by the way, you're not going to get most of these. I am going to read off the nicknames of my Pokemon. I will give you the spelling, and then I can give you, I don't know, maybe I'll give you the type of the Pokemon, one of the types of the Pokemon,
yep.
And you're going to guess which Pokemon it is.
Oh, God, I need to remember what all is in Violet. Okay.
Oh, I'm not, I will tell you if, I can also give you the generation. I'm going to try and not do Generation 9, especially not the late game stuff.
Okay,
unless
okay.
it's like, unless there's a bit.
Can I get partial credit if I can describe what it looks like, but I don't know the name?
Yes.
Okay.
Sure. Okay. I think I did. Okay, well, first up is one that maybe I did say on this podcast before. But this is Literal Queef.
Is Literal Queef is the name?
Yes. Spelled LiteralQueaf.
Okay.
I had to dodge the sensors.
Type and generation?
The generation is 3.
Okay.
And the type is fire.
And the type is fire?
Mm-hmm.
Is it from the Torchic line?
It is not.
Is it a Torkoal?
I'll give you credit for like I would give you credit for if you got it in the line. I'll say that much.
It's not. Oh, is it Numel?
It is not Numel.
Or Camerupt. Okay, no.
Okay, that's that. We have logic.
Gotta
to
move
through.
On. Okay.
That is a Torkoal.
That was Torkoal. Oh, I said Torkoal in the middle.
Oh, did you? I didn't hear you.
I was moving too quick.
Okay.
Okay. Yep.
Great. Well, whatever. I'll hear it in the edit, and you can get credit. Hey, I rhymed. Let's move on. This is Torkoal.
This is named Torkoal. Okay.
This is Torkoal, a Generation 2 Pokemon.
Uh-huh.
I wish this was Generation 3 Fire, but it's not. It's Generation 2 and Flying.
Generation 2 Flying? Is it a Murkrow?
It is a Noctowl.
Noctowl. Ah! Okay.
I couldn't think of anything else.
He's called it Torkoal.
This is Human Baby.
Human Baby. Okay. Gen and type?
Yeah. Human Space Baby. Generation 1 type grass.
Oh, it's Bellsprout.
It's Victreebell. Yeah, it's Victreebell. I fully evolved that one. Correct. Good job. You got that one. This is Ski Lover 89.
Ski Lover, okay.
I upgraded from 87 to 89. I was like, no, I'm switching. Now I'm doing the birth year. Generation 1 type water.
Seal or dugong?
No, this is a Gyarados.
This is a Gyarados?
Because it's lover flying 18. Like water ski.
Oh, I guess. Okay, sure.
I don't know. Okay. Kesha. Gen 5 electric.
Gen 5 electric. I was going to say Clink, but that's steel type. Gen 5 electric Kesha. Clearly the joke here is about TikTok. Is it the eel?
No, good guess. This one's a Galvantula. I just wanted to name it Kesha. There's no
TikTok joke.
There's no joke there. This one's kind of a callback. Tan Tip. This one is Gen 9.
This is Gen 9.
It's a new one, but I know you know it exists.
Is it Knackle? Is it the Salt Rock?
It's Garganackle, but it's shiny form, so it's tan.
Okay.
This is a good one. Lisa Loeb.
Lisa Loeb?
Yes. The singer-songwriter from the 90s. Writer of the hit song Stay. It's Gen 5, and do I want to be nice to you? Yeah, I'll say Ghost.
Okay, so not like Reniculous or whatever like the cellular psychic one is.
No, because that's not Ghost.
Yeah, it's not Ghost. That was my first thought for Jenny Loeb.
Jenny Loeb? Or Lisa Loeb?
Lisa Loeb.
Do you not know? You know who Lisa Loeb is.
Nope.
I just explained it.
Ghost Gen 5.
Oh my god.
Is it the sarcophagus?
No. And I hope I'm getting all my gens right, because I'm not looking them up, but this is Chandelure.
Oh, Chandelure, okay.
Because it's got like the little glasses.
Yeah.
Okay, here's some good ones. This is Mimi Bobek.
Mimi Bobek?
You know, the character from the Drew Carey show.
Sure, okay.
Generation 6. Let's do dragon.
Gen 6.
Because, like, just knowing the Gen 6 dragons is enough.
Is Gen 6 Sun and Moon?
Yes.
Okay.
No. Yes? Hold on. I just had this open and I...
Oh, no. Gen 6 is X and Y, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Is it the purple and black dragon with multiple heads, like the puppet?
No, good guess. It is Neuvern.
Oh, Neuvern. That's the version of that from Gen 6. I think the purple black dragon's from 5, actually.
Oh, is it? Oh, well. Yes, sorry. No, that's the Zubat of Gen 6. Gen 5, it's like the Swoobat of Gen 6, but it freaking rules. Next up is Kathy Kinney, the actress who plays Mimi Bobek on the Drew Carey show. They're two separate Pokemon.
Is this Hydreigon?
No, okay. That would be really good. I just looked up Kathy Kinney on the Pokemon wiki. Like it was going to be there. Uncomfy Uncle.
Uncomfy Uncle. Hate that. Okay.
This is, I think, Gen 3. And it's normal.
Gen 3 normal. Uncomfy Uncle. Slacking?
Correct.
Yeah, I got one. I guess I got like two. I got Torkoal and Slaking.
Hell
Gen 3
yeah.
is what I know the best.
Okay, this one is Poppers.
Poppers?
It's Poppers with a little tilde. And I think this is Gen 6 and Water. Hold on. This is Gen 7. Sorry.
Gen 7? Oh, okay.
So,
God, there's so many water ones in Gen 7. What is it? One of the fish?
It's a water type.
Is it the purple fish with the big lips?
Oh, God, no. Ugh. No, this is Popplio.
Oh, okay.
That one was easy enough.
You can get a Popplio in Scarlet and Violet?
You can get all the starters, yeah, in the second DLC. This
Wait,
is...
so I could have a Meganium? Ooh.
That's the one you want.
Hey, man.
That is... Listen, I'm a grass lover. That is bottom of the barrel.
Pokemon Gold is my first Pokemon game, okay?
All right. Man,
Meganium and Snorlax and Umbreon got me through beating Red at the end.
Okay. Hey, good job. I love that for you. This is Kyle.
This is Kyle? Okay.
This is a rock type from Generation 7. Rock if you get type. This, I will be stunned if you get this.
With the hands? This is the water thing with the hands?
I don't even know what the fuck that is. So
it's not the thing that's like the underwater like... Oh, what is that? Okay, hold on.
Oh, Binnacle?
Binnacle, that's what I'm thinking of.
What gen is that? That's Gen 6.
It's Gen 6? It's not Gen 7? Oh, okay.
Kyle, rock.
Rock type Gen 7. What were the fossils in Gen 7? Is it the icy fossil dinosaur?
Oh, good guess. No. This is a Minior.
Oh, wait, Mimior?
Minior. The little meteor rock?
Oh, right. The thing that doesn't do anything. Or
no, that's not true. It won the world championships. What are you talking about?
Oh, right. Okay, yes. That thing that has weird technical abilities that are great and competitive but don't make sense in the campaign.
It's fine. It's good. Listen, I'm proud of Kyle.
I never would have guessed that Minior.
I got a shiny Kyle. Shiny Minior's are really hard to find because they look identical to regular Minior's because they're not out of their shells. They're the same shell color, but they're just black on the inside with the rainbows. So I did my damnedest to find a shiny, and goddammit, I got one. And I named it Kyle. Okay, we'll do a couple more. James K. Polk.
James K. Polk.
I don't know the generation of this one. Hold on. Gen 6, and it's water.
Gen 6 water, James K. Polk. I am pulling a blank on water types from Gen 6. I'm trying to figure out like what
X and Y, right?
Yeah, X and Y. Like what the heck are the water types in that one?
There's so many generations, it's hard to like. And I already did.
Does it have a second type?
It does not. You know, sure, I'll give you that. I won't give you the second type, but this one does not have a second type. And I don't think it has a second type in any of its evolutions either. Let me double check. Yes, correct. It's a pure water type throughout. I don't think you're going to get this.
No, I've got no idea.
Clauncher.
Clauncher.
Yeah.
Okay, yep.
I don't know why I named him that. This one is Generation 2 normal, named Stinky.
Named Stinky?
Stinky, with two E's.
Is this Furret?
It is Aipom.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And this one is Generation 2 electric, named Tipper.
Raikou?
No. Good guess. This is Mareep.
Oh, Mareep. Duh. I was like, what Gen 2 electric types are there? But I love the whole Mareep line.
Yeah, they're great. They're great. This one is Side Sack.
Side Sack?
Yeah. It's Generation 3 Water.
Waylord?
No. No. I don't think that one's in Violet.
It should be.
I know, right? But like, just seeing that out in the wild.
The Waylord just kind of...
That'd be sick. Dude, they got Dundozo. That thing's huge. Did you want another guess?
Oh, yeah. One more guess.
There's like a lot of waters in Gen 3 because of the dive thing.
Yeah, there's so much water. Is it Pelipper?
No. Good guess. It is, in fact, Love Disc.
Love Disc.
Because it's a sack on the side. And I've gotten fucking 3 shiny Love Discs and I'm not looking for them. I'm like, go away. I hate these things.
Right. Sorry. Yeah, no. Love Disc and Melodic, the two that I don't recall from that gen because I never caught them because I didn't want to engage in the beauty contest stuff.
That beauty contest stuff was fun, though. But Melodic is that's a good one. Okay. A couple more. We'll do.
Yeah.
Gen 7 Grass. This one is. Whoa!
Executor?
Yes!
Really?
It is, in fact, Alolan Executor. Gen 7 Grass.
Wait, you can get that Executor in Scarlet and Violet?
Yes!
Hell yes!
So, that was another shiny I got that I was just like, whoa!
Whoa, wait, you got a shiny? Can I see?
Yeah, sure.
Fucking sick, dude. I love Alolan Executor so much.
Oh, yeah, no, that's in the it's in the DLC. That's going to do it, I think, for our Pokemon surprise Pokemon episode.
Yeah. What a swerve.
That was a lot of fun. I just thought it would be a fun way to update people on that journey while we took a break from Sea of Thieves because we were like, price of entry to that game. Just mentally, it's something, there's something weird about Sea of Thieves where it's like, you really got to be in the mood to play it.
Feels like you like almost like make an appointment for it. It doesn't help like both last week and this week. I'm busy when you're streaming, but like we'll figure something out.
It's like, am I gonna play this on my own time by myself? Not really. I tried to log in and I was like,
You and I should schedule sometime next week, early in the week, to just like
we'll see.
Do
yeah.
some private time or something.
Private? Don't say it like that.
Okay.
Anyway. Anyway, that's going to do it for this week's episode of Goldvember on Stormbuds. Thank you all for listening. You can join, of course, our Discord, and you can write to us at the email in the link at the description of the episode. I, without further ado, have been your golden boy of light. Oh, actually, no. I want to talk about... I would like to remind everyone that the Heavens of Odds are approaching, and after this episode, actually after next week's episodes, we will have some Bud's Choice Awards for the Heavens Awards, so make sure you are in the Discord for that, for your voices to be heard for the Heavens Awards. And of course, remember, I am your Dutch golden boy of light, Jerome Barbatus, and this week I have been joined by my co-Dutch golden boy of light, Alexander Hambrock. Say goodbye!
Goodbye!
Oh, very good echoing. Loved it.
My dad works in pharmaceutical marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he loves engaging calls. Then he talked about his favorite, key opinion leaders. My friends still make fun of me to this day.
Sorry. I know what ad you're making fun of. It's so funny. I'm sorry. I ruined it. Hold on. Okay, phew. Okay, got it. Let's go again. We'll keep that, though.
My dad works in pharmaceutical marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he loves engaging calls. Then he talked about his favorite, key opinion leaders, and my friends still make fun of me to this day.